Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Your first one's on us.
You already know this is a good episode. We're laughing. It hasn't started.
He called me a fuck face.
What are you, Cal Ripken Jr.?
What the hell is that?
Remember that baseball card Cal Ripken had?
Yeah.
And it said fuck face on the bat?
Yeah.
No!
It's worth like a ton of money because a bunch of them went through before they pulled them.
Yes.
So are you kidding me?
Yes.
Right on the bottom of the bat.
Somebody had scratched onto the negative of the baseball card before they ran through, like, fuck face. Right at the bottom of the handle
That's
of the bat.
That's so great. Yeah.
I totally forgot about that.
I've never heard about that, but I just thought it was funny that right before we went on the air, the last thing that was said was Joe called me a fuck face.
I remember as a little kid, I was scouring every baseball card
to
store because I wanted a fuck face.
It must
face
be
card.
Worth so much money.
I didn't even care that it was worth money. I just wanted a card that said fuck face.
That's
I thought
hilarious.
It was like, oh my God. Yeah. And my dad would have liked it. Like
sorry
my dad would have been
fuck
like,
face
oh,
just sneezed.
Sorry. God bless you. Folks, this is Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. I'm your host, Mark Rigonato, and with me as always,
fuck face.
And your producer, Soul Joel.
Fuck face Jr.
This is like Dick Tracy and all the bad guys. It's fuck face and shithead and.
I guess right now we should put a warning. Yeah. If you do not like explicit language.
Yeah, we usually don't curse, but.
Nah, yeah, it's fine.
Can we fuck face?
Can we say the fuck word?
Yes.
Just don't say damn.
Don't say GD.
Our very special guest is back.
Back
he's,
by popular demand.
He's been on
demand.
The show before.
Yeah, what a great time we had. Back. How long ago
that?
Was that?
It was boy. Such. God,
and you've grown.
I gotta
grown,
be honest.
So
I didn't think you'd still be alive all this time later.
You know, that's that. I don't know what to take that as.
That's gonna be really weird if somehow DJ dies.
Oh Jesus!
DJ Hazard
is in the house.
Okay, he's in the house.
Now I'm double dog.
The legend
to stay alive. Okay.
Now he's double dog. Dared, yes.
I have to bring this up because I think DJ will get a kick out of this. This weekend he's we're planning. He's coming down to visit. He's very close with our family. And my 4-year-old outed me on Facebook and told my wife.
Oh, yes.
He tells my wife at breakfast, he goes, hey, daddy watches adult bad adult movies upstairs. And my wife got nervous and was like, what do you mean? Was there violence? And he goes, no. She goes, does everybody have their clothes on? And he goes, yeah. And she goes, well, what is it? And he goes, it's like 100 old ladies sitting around saying real mean stuff. It was the Golden Girls. He outed me for watching the Golden Girls.
On the second floor.
Wow.
Only upstairs.
Wow. All alone.
When I was following the thread, when this you know, when you first posted it, and nobody knew it. At first I thought, the view.
The view. And then another thing, the 2-year-old, I'm just prepping you on this for when you come down. The 2-year-old the other night, he had a fever, and I was rubbing his back, and I was, like, doing big circles with my whole hand on his back, and he started falling asleep, and I thought he was out. So I started rubbing slower and smaller, and then as I took my hand away, he just reached back like a horror movie and grabbed my hand and put it back on his back. Like, you're not done, bitch.
You're not done yet.
I'll tell you when you're done.
We should have taken him for our spa day.
He could be like, who's my daddy?
Oh, God.
Just like a week and a half ago, I'm on the subway, and I'm sitting like right near the door, and this very, very pregnant lady comes on, right? So I just get up, and I see she, and she give her my seat. She goes, oh, thank you very much. I said, and we just like, it felt like we could talk for a second, right? And I said, how you doing? You feeling good? And she goes, yes, thank you. She's sitting in her seat. And I said, well, you look great. Is the first kid? She goes, yeah. She goes, do you have kids? I said, no, but I used to be a baby.
First-hand experience. So how we start show is we usually start with talking about our favorite drink.
Yes.
I want to bring up a drink because I saw it and I'm ready to go have one over at Duke's, which is right up a couple doors up from the comic strip. They have a thing called the Duke-a-Rita, and it's just a margarita with their twist on it.
Oh.
And they have upside down beer in it. Like, so there's a beer in the margarita.
Yeah.
So as you drink it, the beer slowly goes down, and you get a beer and a margarita at the same time.
Yeah, this sounds like something you'd want to do.
That's like some out of Bad News Bears.
Yeah. It's not going to.
It just sounds like for the alcoholic who doesn't have a lot of time.
Yeah, I got to get two drinks at once.
Multitask.
Now, if you double fist a Duke-a-Rita, you're actually four fisting.
Yes.
You're getting four drinks at the same time.
I think four fisting could be misconstrued as something else altogether.
That's a Richie Burns.
You took
Burns
the words
Saturday
right
night.
Out of my mouth.
That's a Richie Burns Saturday night.
Yeah. I was like, no one's going to hit this low.
Say, why? No dinner first? Yeah.
Speaking of Cal Ripken. So that's you. You're telling me this because you want me to go with you and have a Duke-a-Rita?
I think we should.
See,
try
I'm not
it.
A tequila guy.
Okay, well, get a whiskey-a-Rita.
Remember that day the last time DJ was on the show and we went over and had the Kahlua and beer? Wasn't that great?
Oh, yeah, let's turn you on to that.
It's like a milkshake.
Yeah. But Richie, what do you people drink?
Everything else.
I like scotch.
Scotch is good.
I like a scotch. I like vodka. I'm a vodka guy.
I'm not much vodka.
Yeah.
If it's there, I mean, if I'm all alone and there's no groceries and it's just a bottle of vodka,
you'll go for it.
I'll be rushing.
Tater juice.
Yeah, I can't drink gin.
No gin for
gin,
me.
Gin, yeah. When I was before comedy, I had a bunch of friends, and they were
in college. I used to drink gin. And
oh yeah, no, I never went to college, but people think a lot of things about that I never did. But my friends are.
I can't believe you were a baby.
I know. I was a pretty. Old
I
That's
imagine the exact same head, but just a little baby.
I think
body.
It's yeah, pretty much the same thing
beard,
we're looking at now.
Group.
I want milk, mama.
Mama,
that bad guy won't bother
the
you.
The baby
anymore.
Is a freak.
So anyway,
Tanqueray and tonic—that was their drink. And I tried going along with it, you know. And it's like, you know, after a while, it's like, you know, why am I doing this?
Yeah, that was that. I drank Tanqueray and tonic.
Yeah.
In college, and then one day I went, you know, I don't like this. Like, it took me a long time to know I didn't like.
There's a lot of things that, and of course now. Now that I'm 37, I'm learning. You don't have to drink if you don't like what they have.
No.
Right. Which is ironic coming out of your mouth.
Exactly. Because for me, it's like if they had alcohol, I'd just drink it.
Right.
But I didn't care if it's like I don't like certain things. And now I realize, like, or I could just not drink.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't have to.
I know.
Cider and certain wines give me really bad headaches. If that's all they have, I don't have to drink.
Right.
And I always felt pressure that you have to have alcohol.
Well, you know? then the other side of the spectrum. Any of you guys ever have a garbage pail party?
No.
Where you get a trash can, you line it with a trash bag, right? Nice and clean. Everybody, it's BYOB, but for everybody. And what do you bring in? What they bring? You dump
and
into
you
the
drink it like
yes.
a punch.
Yeah, it's like a punch.
Yeah.
That sounds.
It's like beer and wine and scotch and this and that.
Is there ice in the bag or?
There is ice in the cup.
Oh, in a cup. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, when you ladle it out.
I would think you'd have to have some.
Something just to take.
Yeah,
good boy.
Is it good?
Cold, so
it must get you fucked up.
Yeah, the first one's hard, and then the rest are like, you know.
You don't remember.
I think there are other ones.
So, the second part of our show, we generally tell a street joke.
Okay.
DJ, do you have a joke you'd like to tell us?
Is it my turn again? Okay.
It's always your turn when you're the guest.
Okay. Guy's at work, and he's been totally suspicious for a long time. He's positive his wife's messing around when he's at work, right? So he says, I'm gonna leave work early and come down and just kind of, right? So he's coming in, And the place is a shambles, it's a wreck. You know, she's in bed naked, her hair is all messed up, crazy. There's like pillows and everything all over the place. There's drinks all over the tables and stuff like that. And he goes, ha-ha! I knew it! Where is he? And they're in the apartment building, right? He looks out the window, and there's this really, you know, debonair asshole guy with your shades and a key ring going out to his sports car, walking out like the cat who ate the canary. I said, motherfucker. Right, so he looks around for anything, right? And he picks up like this giant armoire, right? He throws it out the window, lands on the guy, squashes him flat. Okay, we're at the pearly gates.
Okay, part two.
Yeah. So the husband when he picks it up, it's too much for him. And he dies of a heart attack. Okay, so there. Okay. So we're at the pearly gates, and the first guy comes up and he goes, "Hey, welcome to heaven. How'd you get here?" So walking out of my apartment to my car, and this giant piece of furniture fell on me and squashed me. He's like, "Oh, great! Well, okay, come on in." Yeah. So, welcome to heaven. How'd you get here? I said, "Well, I caught my wife cheating, and I picked this giant piece of furniture and I threw it on this guy and had a heart attack and it killed him." "Oh, that's okay. Welcome to heaven. Welcome to heaven." Third guy comes. "Welcome to heaven. How'd you get here?" "Well, I'm hiding in this armoire."
Now, DJ,
that's great.
Did you always? You were in a band before you became a comedian.
Yeah, a couple of them. Yeah.
And you went to school at a very prestigious,
cool
high school, right?
Boy, you don't forget anything, do you?
I know.
It's not prestigious. Yeah, well, it was here in New York City. I went to the High School of Art and Design. It is prestigious because it was very. It meant a lot. It changed my life in many, many, many ways. And it was really cool. Was that there's a couple of kids in my junior high, my senior year in junior high, who were taking the test to get in there as well. And they were like, they were like terminally hip guys, even for 1967. You know, they were just like, they always had really cool clothes and this and that. And they thought so much of themselves. They didn't get accepted. I got accepted.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And
art comes through. You can't fake it.
No.
You can buy the clothes. Right, you can't.
You know, that's
what
right.
What did you have to go through to, is there an audition?
Yeah, well, you showed up one day, you bring a portfolio, and while you're in the classroom, it's like a day off for wherever the school is, you know, mm-hmm. But you're in the school. And it's right on Second Avenue, they just tore it down a couple of years ago.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. But it was like 57th and Second. But so you're in one of the classrooms, and you think, oh, my God, this is like, wow. And you bring a portfolio, which you didn't even know what a portfolio, you bring your drawings from home, right? Mm-hmm. And while the teacher's looking at all the portfolios and judging stuff like that, he gives you a couple of assignments to draw something to make sure that you are the guy who's drawn through those pictures over there. So,
okay.
One was like a couple of people, it was like a written thing. So, draw some people in a department store browsing stuff. And that was the only one I remember. Might have been another one too. But it was at the time, it was like 11. I think special high schools, and I went to art and design. I almost went to music and art, but my homeroom teacher, she goes, no, go to art and design. You're like art and design material. She's like my muse. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well.
And my buddy, my best buddy, was in a band with, and we were like the Lennon McCartney of Astoria, Queens. My buddy John. Yeah, we wrote millions of songs.
The Simon and Garfunkel.
Simon and Garfunkel. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, that name was always taken. And, so he went to performing arts, the Fame School, and we used to cut school all the time and hang out in the other guy's school.
Really?
You cut
school to go to school?
Yeah.
You're the opposite of me.
His school was, like, excellent, too. We hung out with Freddie Prinze, was one of his gang.
Yeah. I work right around the corner from performing arts.
And
you can see those kids are... There's something special about
those
kids.
Yeah,
And I'd read that Freddie Prinze went there.
He went there, but it's part that year that we're all going, and he's part of, and he was Freddie Pritzell.
So you knew him?
Yeah,
high school.
He was Freddie Pritzell because he was Hungarian, right. And Puerto Rican, a Hungarian. Remember?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
his joke.
Right.
And we all hung out together. And there used to be a place on the West Side called the Triple Inn. And it was 7th Avenue, 8th Avenue.
Yeah, I remember the Triple
Inn. Yeah. And we were all underage, but back then it didn't matter.
No.
And we would go there on a Friday or Saturday night or something like that. And all a bunch would bring our guitars. There'd be like 11, 12 of us. And they would give us beer all night. And we'd go up on stage all night at different combinations of musicians or whatever. And
that's cool.
And Freddie would go up and do stand-up like a couple of times during the night
To
break it up, yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And you had no interest in being a comedian at this point?
No. And musicians are kind of funny anyway, right? Yeah. So we're always messing around.
Well, I really believe, I'm always surprised when I meet a comic who doesn't have any musical ability.
Yes.
Because to me, it's so, I think it's why a lot of singers can do comedy. Like when you watch like Sinatra was
yeah.
Because there's a timing.
Yeah.
And there's a feel. Mm-hmm. That you have to have, and I'm a singer.
And it's like getting to the point as quick as possible. Yeah, you can't go on a mono. You don't want a Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, I'm always blown away by comics who don't have any musical ability whatsoever.
A lot of them are musicians.
A lot of them, if you notice,
a lot of them are artists.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of them are teachers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's the big three.
So Freddie, were you in comedy? When did you start comedy?
I started long after that.
Okay.
My family moved to Boston.
Okay.
About a year out of high school. I was totally like just drifting around. I had no idea what to do with myself. And I moved out of the house very soon, right? I was like barely like 18, whatever. And I went to Harvard Square and met a whole bunch of these land pirates, these poet warriors, these incredible bohemians who are like all, I mean, they're...
And this is what, late 60s, early 70s?
This was early 70s, yeah. And these men and women, I mean, they're like in their 20s. I mean, they're like 23, 24. Yeah, my woman might have been 27, my God.
Yeah.
And they're the coolest people in the world. And a bunch of them are moving to Chicago. And they said, we're moving to Chicago. There's a thing. We're going to live above this store. Might be running a store. I don't know where it is. I go, yeah, why? So,
and at this time, you couldn't Google it, so you had to take their word for it.
I had to take their word for it, yeah. And you're right. And so
I still can't Google. I've seen his phone.
Oh, my God.
Oh, unbelievable callback.
Oh, ruthless.
And I think that was to the last show.
I know.
It's hard to believe I remembered it.
Let's go back to the archives.
Ruthless.
Back to you, DJ.
No steak. Ruthless. Where's the meat? So I went to Chicago, and I was already been playing around, you know, guitar and stuff like that. Stuff like, and there was a coffee house that we all worked at. That's where we ended up working at. And I would play in the coffee house like many, many of the nights of the week, right? And it was like this unwritten law that folk singers had to talk in between songs. You had to tell where the next song came from or something, mm-hmm. and sets up the next song and things like that. So I started telling these little things, right? And that's where I first got my first kind of like, you know, taste the blood.
So you left New York in the early 70s to become a folk singer somewhere
in Chicago.
In Chicago. That makes sense.
And then it used to be a thing where I used to do the obituary of the week. And whoever the most famous guy in Chicago who died, and people would bring me a bit from the paper, obituary, stuff like that. I would put it to music right on the spot. And there was a department store, Weebolt's, and the patriarch of the family of Weebolt's, Werner A. Weebolt. And I just remember like, doing this like Werner A. Weebolt, da da boom ba, Werner A. da da, and I'm reading the obituary. He leaves behind a. So it became the obituary of the week, and there was these two Jesus freaks who used to come. These two little girls. They're no girl, but I mean they're late teens, early 20s. But they're both Roly Poly. They you know, these
strange names, Roly and Poly.
Roly and Poly. These funny little girls. They look like Oompa Loompas, and they're very sweet. And they're but Jesus freaks used to come to the show, and they told me I was possessed by Satan, and that they're praying for me. And then before they leave, they said, "By the way, great show."
You were doing performance art before performance art.
So I'm living upstairs in this giant apartment with all these, you know, older, crazy people. And it became, you know how it is, close quarters in the early 70s. Everybody kind of matched up and hooked up or whatever. And my girlfriend, Vanessa, she was from England. And her friend who came to America with her was Gina. And she was from England too, right? And at one point I'm doing a much later, like a couple of years ago, here in New York, I'm doing the storytelling scene. I'm doing a one-man show. I'm talking about my time in Chicago. Because I originally went to Boston. I was going to go to Emerson College, and I ended up in Chicago. So at one point, I go, you know, I'm barely 19 years old. I've lived in three major cities, and I'm sleeping with an older woman from another country. Fuck college.
Oh, my God. I was thinking that when you were talking about, like, yeah. I didn't realize New York, Boston, and then Chicago. Yeah. I was like, this
is
unbelievable.
Well, you know what's really weird about that story is that there are younger people listening to this podcast now, you know, three of them,
And they're all going, there's no way he went to high school with Freddie Prinze. Freddie Prinze is like 35 years old. They're thinking it's
right. TV, Freddie yeah. Prinze Jr.
They don't
right.
realize.
Yeah.
There was a.
Vanessa, you know, she was, at one point, I forget what. She's asked me once. I asked her once, Vanessa, you know, Americans are so enamored with British accents. Anybody, you get anybody to do anything with the British accent. Yeah. We're just so in love. How do Americans sound to English people? She goes, you sound like dogs barking.
She's true. Yeah. That's what we do sound like.
Yeah. Thank you.
Buddy. Hey, buddy.
Yeah. I say, okay. Okay. So one weekend, Saturday afternoon, we go to the beach. There's a beach right along Lake Michigan there, right? What she didn't realize that the skyline and the highways of Chicago, amazing, goes right up to like the beach. It's like so close, and the beaches are reinforced with concrete underneath to prevent any erosion with the storms to come in over to Lake Michigan and stuff like that. So she's digging in the sand. I'm taking a nap or something like that. Suddenly she goes out a couple of feet. She hits the concrete down on the sand. She goes, what's this? Why? I'm sleeping. What do you want? It's, what's this concrete under the sand? What are we talking about? They're going to sign this concrete on you. I said, Vanessa, do you go to school in England? She goes, yeah. And I said, you know, did you study, like, you know, world history and things like that? Yeah. I said, Panama Canal, Great Wall of China? Yeah. Well, what's your point? I said, they never told you about the building of Lake Michigan? She goes, what? I said, yeah, up until like 100 years ago, this is tundra going all the way to Canada. And with the Industrial Revolution, they needed a quarry because they needed stone to build factories. And they dug as far as they could and couldn't dig any further, and they lined it with concrete and waited till it rained.
Oh, my God.
So for I don't know how many – at some point, see, turned out her last name was Spencer. Okay, English, Spencer. Mm. I think she may or may not have been
related.
Lady Dias, yeah. Because Gina, she eloped with one of the other guys, and we found out that Gina was Lady Georgina Petty Fitzmaurice Hugh or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. So they had cred. And so for years, I wondered how many cocktail parties, cotillion stuff like that, Vanessa's at. And she's telling
people
the story of the building of Lake Michigan.
She was at the wedding over the weekend.
Yeah. And every time, if she ever does, I just go, that's her saying we sound like dogs.
Oh. That's all I could think about. Yeah, but we sound like dogs.
But we sound like dogs, yeah.
So when you moved to Boston,
yeah.
You were part of the movement that's basically what made Boston comedy Boston comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Boston comedy.
A major part of it.
Yeah. Boston comedy influenced and I think changed the way comedy is across the country. Mm-hmm. But it was its own thing. You guys weren't even really aware of what else was going on elsewhere.
Right. When I got back to Boston from Chicago, I was putzing around doing. I was working at a state school, I was working at a state institution, and I was the recreation director for a.
Come to DJ when you want a good time.
Yes. And after that, I worked at McLean Hospital, a psych hospital. I did the overnight.
Oh, they told you were working?
Yes.
Here, put on your badge, and here's your gun.
Richie just did was called payback.
That was my treatment to make me think that I was part of the staff, yeah. But that was my therapy. But it's kind of like the ninth configuration you ever seen. horrible movie, but great concept, but a horrible movie.
I never saw it.
But anyway, so I was a stage manager for a comedy play once. I was doing this, I was doing that. And the Comedy Connection was the only game in town. And they only had one open mic a month. It was like the first Tuesday of the month, stuff like that. And I spent a summer messing around with some friends. We're going to do an improv group and a sketch group, and we're going to start. And just before it's time, we had a gig, and just before the gig starts, two of them run off to college or something like that. So I'm stuck with all this material. So that I wrote this, maybe I could transform into one-person stuff. So I called Paul Barkley, the head of the I called, yeah, hi, I just came in from out of town, and comedian, and, you know, just so... When you want to come down and you know, do you know, get some sets, blah blah blah. He goes, well, open mic night is the first Tuesday of the month. No, I don't think I'll stay. I'm talking about Friday, Saturday night. I'd never been on stage, you know, doing comedy. So, but he kind of right. And I ended up doing the Tuesday night, and then right around that time, there was this political mix-up going on with the Connection, all kinds of stuff, and there was a strike. And everybody did, the guys who had shows every night, they had to do their shows in other venues. So there's a different show. The Comedy Connection was doing a different show every night at a different venue. And Wednesday nights, Lenny Clark was the Lenny Clark show, and they moved it to a Chinese restaurant called the Ding Ho. And yes, and it was hanging from the rafters every Wednesday. It went on from like 8 till 1 in the morning. No
Lenny
stop.
Lenny was basically like the mayor of Boston.
Lenny was amazing. It was the most amazing, just fearless open mic in the world. And so Barry Crimmins came in from San Francisco. He was already doing comedy. So he comes in, and he was like sleeping on somebody's couch. He's trying to make it as a comic. He goes to Shun Lee, the owner of the Ding Ho. He said, "You've been trying everything, right?" He goes, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you tried like reggae bands and this and that stuff like that." He goes, "Yeah. You ever notice Wednesday nights, you know,
seem to be working?"
"Yeah, seems to be working." "Yeah." So he goes, "Hey, they worked out the money, whatever. So let me start a comedy club."
Wow.
Yeah. And I was there, and he liked a couple of my open mic material things, and we started talking. And
who are the major players now, right now, in this time frame?
They were like, I call the 12 apostles.
But really, there were four of them.
There might have been like 14 or something, but there was Lenny Clark, Stephen Wright, Don Gavin, Steve Sweeney, Paula Poundstone, Joe Alasky, who went on to be like a voice guy and an actor, a bunch of things like that. Jack Gallagher, who's been doing a lot of work on the West Coast for a million years.
That's seven.
That's seven.
You're not including yourself.
No. Mike McDonald.
I just talked to him. He said hi, by the way.
Oh, hey, Mike McDonald.
Bobcat's not one of them?
No, he came in the second wave.
Okay.
Mike McDonald, George McDonald, who's a very funny guy.
Was Leno already out of town?
Leno was
by this
gone.
Point?
Leno was okay. gone. There were no comedy clubs when he was around. The Connection was just first starting when he was around. But yeah. So let me see who else. Okay, maybe me. Chance Langton.
Chance Langton?
Yes.
Wow.
Really?
Yes.
Give Chance a piece.
Yes.
Chance is a. That's right. Yeah, I remember.
Was Donovan?
Donovan, Mike Donovan. Yes, of course.
I love
yes,
that.
Mike 12. Donovan.
That's 12.
That's 12, yeah.
And DJ was in the middle.
And only one woman.
Yeah.
She was the Mary Magdalene.
As far as we know.
So
Don't tell.
You have this group of 12 that's kind of running things.
And so I come from this background of a commercial art from the art school, and I've been in rock and roll bands, so no sound systems, and the Ding Ho is horrible shape. They're like one little floodlight hanging by a wire, pointing the stage, and a sound system was abysmal. So I souped up the sound system. I did all the artwork and for the club and things like that.
Wow.
And Barry made me like the assistant manager, and I got the MC shows for just because I was there. It said why pay an MC? We got DJ.
Really?
So here I am, barely like a couple months into the business, and I'm hosting shows, and like you know, who gets. Nobody will ever get that kind of...
No.
Yeah.
You're right.
And with that company.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus. So now you're hosting shows. You're doing this. Who are some of the young guys you're bringing up? And
well, number one, everybody was a headliner. There was no, per se, opening act, middle act, closing act. It's like who showed up when.
Yeah.
It was all headliners.
Wow.
Yeah.
Killers.
Yeah. And it was just so.
You even wrote the song for the Ding Ho.
I wrote the Ballad of the Ding Ho, which I wrote on. Which
that just sounds funny.
Yeah. Which I wrote on Stephen Wright's guitar.
No way.
I had not played guitar for a long time. I hung up the guitar for a long time, and it was after a show one night, and everybody's gone. So it wasn't after hours, but it just kind of, and Stephen had a guitar because he's doing a couple of songs in his act. Hey Rachel dear. You know that one?
Right,
How
right,
I Wish
right.
You
yeah,
Were
yeah,
Here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and a couple other songs. But he just barely could play, and he asked me to tune his guitar. I said, yeah. So I tuned his guitar. I was playing a couple of chords. And I came out with the first verse. I did go, you know, Shun Lee came around this time last year. Said, I got myself a great idea. Going to build a Chinese restaurant right here in Emmett Square, you know? Well, it's bad enough. He picked a cowboy saloon, and he filled the jukebox full of crummy tunes. But why do you have to go and name the place Ding Ho?
Oh my God.
That is so cool. I love that stuff,
this is
man.
Like, this is like comedy legend. Like if you're a comedian, yeah, and you don't research the Boston scene. You're not.
1999, years later, we're doing the Dinghole reunion in the Somerville Theater, and Steven asked if he could use my guitar. You want to do Rachel or something like that? I said, dude, it's only fair. I wrote the Dinghole song on your guitar. And he remembered. And we kind of like. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Now, you have so to cool. fill us in on the Somerville Kitchenette.
Somerville Kitchenette, my God. That was my second public access show while I was at the Dingo. That was a mover and a shaker. The first one was just strictly people on stage doing stand-up. And the technology was so primitive. I mean, it was reel-to-reel, you know, black and white, but it looked green on the screen and stuff like that. And the editing was just monstrously bad. And so but the second one, I actually bought a ghetto blaster. It came with a demo tape. And the demo tape was this Spanish to Latin tune written by a Japanese guy. And I said, this is the most amazing song in the world. I got to write a show that this will be the theme song. So I wrote. So, I mean, we might have been doing a lot of illegal things because I never paid royalties or nothing.
Oh, I thought you meant drugs.
No, that too. But so I wrote this show called, because, again, for Somerville Community Access, we were in Cambridge, you didn't go, but Somerville was right over the line. And my friend Susan, she studied at the Community Access, and she said, hey, they said I could do a show. You want to do something? I said, yeah. So I invented this TV show. It was a bunch of shipwrecked aliens, extraterrestrials, stranded on Earth, stranded in Somerville, Massachusetts, who, while they're waiting to get picked up, they have like this magazine information show, like an evening magazine kind of thing. It was called Somerville Kitchenette. And Tony V was my mobile reporter. And
you guys were so goddamn funny.
So he's part of the second wave?
Yeah, Tony was.
So he was one of the younger comics that Mark asked about.
He was the next wave.
Dennis Leary.
Yeah, Leary. All the Emerson guys came in. Leary, Bobcat, like you said, everybody was coming in. Yep, exactly. So Somerville Kitchenette, we did like maybe one show a month, maybe about 6 months. It was, I had the equipment for like 24 hours. I shot 24 hours, all on location. There was no studio, and then I spent then I stayed up all night, like, you know, editing, you know, or logging. The shots and stuff like that. And then we go in the next day. We had like maybe like 3 hours to edit. It was never enough, so I had to rent time in a production house, which is great because then we had like really good credits at the end of the thing. So it was just...
Well, that's really cool.
I didn't know that.
And the only reason why it's called Somerville Kitchenette was that everything we had, all these little mysterious pieces of equipment that SK on them, and they did weird things. They could teleport and things like with them. But it's called Somerville Kitchenette because the insignia on our crash ship look like kind of like an S and a K.
Kinda.
Yeah, and my I was the host of the show. My name was Mickey Bisco, but in where we
my
came from,
character
yes,
yours.
Yeah, I was this lovable lounge. Hey, how you doing? I'm Mickey Bisco. What's up, going? Hey, what's some of the kitchen? Hey, and I always had like a white jacket and a Hawaiian shirt and the whole shebang. But I told I didn't tell the cast that they're extraterrestrials like the third show. I just let them do their thing. I said, by the way, this is what's going on. And they loved it. They loved it. But Mickey Bisco, where he comes from, me means captain. And his real name is Cabisco. He was me Cabisco, Captain Cabisco. Tony V, he went by his name on the show.
Yeah.
Toe was lieutenant. And Nevy was his name. He was Toe Nevy. Yes. And on and on and on. Like all that crazy. We had like these little battery-operated robots you get at the toy store, and they're always, like, coming in and messing up. And, you know, they're like the vermin. They're like the gremlins of our show. And some spoke English, some spoke Spanish. And they did. You hit them on the head.
These now?
No. But I have the tapes. I have the shows.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
What did you think? I meant, do you have them with you now?
No, I thought you meant, do I have the robots?
But you have the tape. Yes.
DJ still carries the robots around just in case someone
has. As a matter of fact.
Oh, man. You should put those together.
You know, I tell you what. I was such an idiot. We had like two shows under a belt. And Paul Barkley, again, the Comedy Connection, we all used to go up to his house to watch it because none of us had some little cable, right? So and then one night we're at the Rat in Kenmore Square, the Rascaler, the rock and roll bar, and Barkley's there, stuff like that. And he was hanging out with this gal from Showtime. And she was up and down, and he said, DJ's got this show. It's really kind of bizarre and stuff like that. And she gave me her card. And I said, I'd like to see it. And I never took her up on it. I was like, so, I don't know.
You should email her now.
Yes.
Yes. I'm ready now.
Yes. I was just so
35 angry. Years later.
But you know, I don't, God knows what would have happened, you know what I mean? But,
no, I know.
Yeah, but you know, I was like, just so, I don't want to, you know, this is like my little project. I don't want anybody messing with it.
Right,
know?
Right.
Yeah.
And they would have.
They would have.
But they were like, yeah, you, the, be you in guys were like a yeah. group just doing your own thing.
Yeah.
There's a great documentary. What's the documentary?
It's the Ding Ho documentary.
Oh, 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 when Stand Up Stood Out.
Oh.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
You got to check out that documentary because I've they seen were it. All doing their own.
Their own. Thought you looked familiar.
They're all doing their own thing.
And you were and in you like, were in the documentary? It was about Boston?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The song is the theme song.
The show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's
what
just
was
amazing.
It on? Was it on like it Showtime or anything? Or was
no,
it
took forever for it to get picked up. Fran Salamita. Produced it, shot it, yes.
Yeah.
And he had the hardest time marketing it and getting distrib. And finally, somebody picked it up, and it's out there. It's out there.
You but, can yeah. find it. Yeah. It's really good because this group of guys just, like, influenced the entire country and had no idea they were doing it.
Right, because yeah. we never traveled.
Yeah, yeah,
we
yeah,
were
yeah.
like Australia. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You didn't have to.
No, we didn't have to. Anymore. The money was... phenomenally obscene,
yeah.
and we just you know just said why go to New York and be a little fish all over again?
We're doing our own.
I
thing.
Got my own show. Here. Yeah, yeah. And we all had TV shows and radio shows and all kinds of things going on. Yeah.
Huh. Well, man. That was fascinating. I'm really glad you made him talk about that.
The
no, because you said I want you to.
Well, talk. That's fuckface, and yes. You've been listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Kaboom.
Last call.
Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.